invite the speakers here to come up at the front. Derek, Don, Gord, Peter, and Armando from Mexico is not here yet, but he will be. Peter, do you want to? Well, thank you everyone for coming and being here on a Friday night. There are many nights or many events that you could be by now attending, but you choose here, so we really thank you. And well, tonight's event is the state of the media at the international and national level. So I am really, really pleased to be emceeing this event because in my country I was a journalist myself, so I really share the passion of that all these people share about the media and the importance of an alternative media. Everybody knows that media or the media discourse is a site for a struggle over meaning and a struggle over power. Media has the power to really shape our public perception, our public opinion, but that can represent different voices or misrepresent, how is the case, the corporate complex of media. We know that it's there to serve certain interests, to serve and to put dominant ideologies over others, but fortunately there is also an alternative media. There is an alternative to this corporate communication complex that is very much framing the issues that affect our daily life. So there is people, there are activists working on alternative media, and unlike mainstream or corporate journalists, usually the people that work on alternative media, our information warriors, they are part of social movements, they are part of the community, so they are accountable to the communities and to the voices that they are trying to represent and to bring to light different perspectives about issues that are important for our communities. So tonight we're going to hear how these information warriors are there in the front line of the struggle over meaning and power. And I am very pleased to introduce each one of them. Probably they are going to introduce themselves a bit more, but for now I'm just going to say that we have Gord Hill here. He is from the publication, Warrior Publication. Then is Don Pell. Don is a contributing editor with the Dominion, but she has been doing this work for many years ago and with different fields of expertise like mining. Probably most of you know that Don's passion is mining. We have also Derek Ospropis from Seven Oaks and Rowell.ca, another online alternative portal, and Peter Royce from Red Eye Coke Radio, and we have also very soon we will have Armando from Mexico that will see how this the struggle over meaning is going on in Mexico. So to start, we're going to start with Gord, and yeah, you have the honor to open our night. Thank you.
Yes, I'll just stand up here and this one. Sure, they want to have this set up. I guess they want me to speak into the microphone so they can record it and stuff. My name is Gord Hill from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation, and my people's territory is on the north coast of Vancouver Island. Just to start with, like, when I was in school and high school, I never had much interest in writing, and I just barely passed those courses. It wasn't until I left school and I became involved in different social movements, that's when I started to write and document stuff. And I always knew the media was really important, because that's what kind of opened my eyes up to what was going on in the world. I'm going to try to, somebody wants to stay there. But, so I always appreciated that importance, and plus I was an artist, so I had an attraction to the graphic arts and the published stuff. And although I was introduced to these ideas of like autonomy and self-determination to somebody, a friend of mine who introduced me to them, it took a lot of study on my own to really start to grasp the ideas. So that's why, to me, the media was really important. And once I became involved in like the anarchist punk movement and stuff, it's fucking okay. Yeah, I'm sorry to stay. Anyways, when I became involved in that movement, then I wanted to contribute, because I felt like I was learning so much. So I started to publish zines, which was a very popular form of communication in the punk scene, because it's all do-it-yourself, and they really encourage people to do stuff, to get active, and to do things. So I started doing that. And through that, I was like exposed to this whole little zine underworld, like all these people who are doing similar types of public communications, and you started sending zines to one another, and then you travel through those cities and you meet the people, and so you had this whole network of organizers and communicators, I guess. And you could go to places, you could travel to Europe and you could stay with people for free in their places or in their squats or wherever. So it's like a big part of a movement, a whole underground movement. That's what I became involved with. And at first, when I became more politicized, I was mostly involved in Central American solidarity groups from about 1987 to about 1990. In 1990, of course, there was the Oka crisis, and that made me appreciate more my own indigenous roots and my people's resistance here. Because before I got involved in the punk scene, I was in the Canadian Forces. I was in the Army Cadets and Reserves for quite a few years, so I came from this kind of military background. So when I became interested in the anarchist movement, that I was attracted to more kind of guerrilla struggle, and that was a very important part of my political development. I was reading a magazine, it was called Resistance, and it was all communiques from urban guerrilla groups in Western Europe, which very much inspired me. So anyway, in 1990, with the Oka crisis, I became more involved in indigenous struggle, because of course there my people were standing up with arms, engaging in armed resistance, and so that inspired me too, because of my military mindset that I still have today. That's why I'm a militant. Anyway, so after 1990, I became involved in different social movements, like the kind of radical anarchist left-wing social movement, and then the indigenous movement as well. And so I was involved in organizing a lot of indigenous stuff here in the city, and then also like anti-fascist work and stuff like that. And then in 1995, there was an armed standoff in the central interior of BC at Gustavson Lake with the Shikwamik Nation. And so that kind of, I just became involved in indigenous movement organizing after that. And then 1997, 1998, we had the Native Youth Movement, which I was involved with here. We did a lot of occupations and went to blockades and protests and stuff like that. In 1999 as well, I went down to Seattle and was involved in the anti-World Trade Organization riots, which were very inspiring too. And all through those years, I produced propaganda. Not too interested in the corporate media, except in how it, because it manipulates the masses. So I always want to be aware of how they're doing that and different social trends that are often manifested through the media. So I use that. It's also a good way to document different movements and stuff. And anyways, hold on, I want to kind of use my hands. So anyway, I just wanted to show some of the different types of propaganda that I work with. You kind of use multimedia kind of stuff, because there's not one form of public communication that's always the best. Like, some people read, but like maybe a lot of people in this room are from universities or whatever, and read a lot. I read a lot as well to study stuff so I can learn it. So I produce booklets like this. This one's 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance, and it's been published by AK Press, which is an alternative book publisher in the United States. And then, as you can see, it's pretty much all text with a little bit of graphics. That's good for people who have the capacity to sit down and read stuff. We also produce. I also produce like smaller leaflets, like this one against the anti-2010 Winter Olympics. It's just like a brief summary of some of the main issues. And comics for people who don't really want to read at all. I produce comics and a lot of graphic artwork type of stuff. And this one's about the 2010 Olympics as well. posters. This is one example of a poster. It's all the indigenous territories of what they call British Columbia, which is, as of course you all know, is all stolen indigenous land, pretty much. The posters are really effective because you can just give it to the person, they can put it up on their wall, and it's there for a long period of time. You can put it up on the streets, which is another area that's really important to have a presence in as a social movement, like with all our posters and stickers as well. Like here's a color sticker. This is actually a giant 8-foot-high billboard that we painted, me and a friend. It was supposed to go on one of the buildings that was being constructed downtown. But when they saw it, they didn't want to put it up because it's an anti-2010 propaganda. There's a little sticker. These are very, very, very helpful. Because I'm one of the editors of this website. It's called no2010.com. And it's got a lot of information about the 2010 Winter Olympics and about our resistance to it. And these are very effective. This is actually one of the most effective pieces of propaganda I've ever had is these stickers, and it leads you to a website. Make t-shirts as well, and these are $15, $20, and they're available over on the side there if you would like to buy one. These are t-shirts are really good forms of communication too, because I can go to different events like powwows or conferences and stuff, and I can sell my t-shirts. And even if the people don't buy my t-shirt, I still put a message up to them, they still see it, so we have a presence like that. And it's a lot harder for conservatives in our community to stop us from distributing this type of propaganda, because we're trying to make a living, which they always promote upon us, you know, the economic development, blah blah blah, this capitalist ideology. So when we show up, like, we're trying to support ourselves, so it's hard for them to shoot this down, and it produces more income for our organizing work as well. So along with this stuff, I was built on the poster as I was working on Warrior Publications, which is a project I started a couple years ago as a way of distributing more information among our indigenous communities and within our movement. So there's a little binder over here. Like over here is their display table for people to look at display copies of stuff that is produced. So these are some of the magazines I've produced over the last couple years. So it's hard to publish these because, as you know, the expenses for doing this stuff is very high nowadays, like with printing and postage. So I went to I go to a corporate Xerox company, and I liberate all my magazines from them. So these are the first few issues of this magazine. I call it Warrior because one thing we try to do in our movement is promote the warrior culture among our people, because we see that as necessary for them to have a fighting spirit, to engage in resistance, right? This is a part of our traditions that the governments and the Christians and that try to suppress within our people, so we try to revive that. These are like magazines and comics. These are this one's a documentation of blockades throughout the history of British Columbia, well, since the 80s or something. So this is like an important document because it helps us maintain our history and as a movement, as a people, and it can inspire people to do more actions like this, right? Because they see it's been done before, and it can actually be pretty common and routine. Produce manuals as well so that we can distribute skills throughout our movement. Like got manuals on public speaking, like this one here, public speaking. Security and counter-surveillance, because as a resistance movement, of course, we have an opposing force who's trying to undermine us, and that, of course, is the government and the police. So we want our people, our militants, to know how to deal with state repression and surveillance. This one's a manual on crowd control and riots, because we have to fight, and this is an important part of our movement, is fighting against government forces. And this is the most recent stuff I've been working on the last couple of years, is an anti-Olympic campaign. So this is some documentation that I produced as a result of our actions over the last couple of years. So as I said, these things are pretty expensive to produce, and this distribution is difficult as well because we can't just go down to the local neighborhood Native Friendship Center and drop off our propaganda, because within that we have all these people who are employed by the government, and a lot of them are straight collaborators, so they'll just take our stuff and throw it away. So we hand it out by person. Whenever we travel to conferences or go places, we distribute it like that. And most of this stuff now we put up on a website. It's warriorpublications.com. So it's kind of like an archive now. It's not a very sophisticated website. I don't have that many web skills, as they say. So I just maintain it as an archive. And mostly what I've been putting my effort into now is the no2010.com website. And as I was saying, this is one of the most effective pieces of propaganda I've ever had, because I give this to people and they just want it. And all the all these kids, all the street kids, whenever I walk through a commercial drive where there's a lot of Native housing, whenever I see these kids, they just want stacks of these off me because they want to go out and put these stickers up. And it's just something they want to contribute and participate in or whatever, but they're helping out a lot in getting this website, getting this information out to the public domain, which is like a big struggle, because when we're fighting against the corporations and the government, they have such massive resources to control people's minds and thoughts. So whenever we can break through that, that's really important. And one of the most important or effective ways of breaking the spell, as they say, is through action. So the whole purpose of all this information and propaganda is to get people mobilized so that they take action, not just so that they read it and are illuminated like some Buddha sitting under a tree. We want them to get up and get out and do something with that information. And so with that, I think I pretty much said what I had to say, and I'm just going to leave my stuff here because it's kind of a hassle.
All right. Good evening, buenas noches. I came here to dance and eat food, but I'm gonna say a couple of things. Anyways, whoops, okay, that's the end of them. There we go. My name is Dawn Haley. I am a contributing editor with the Dominion paper. That's my new incarnation, previously known as Vagabunda, working on mining issues in particular, and I'll get to that a little bit later. Who here is familiar with the Dominion newspaper? All right. One day it will be like that in, I don't know, a McDonald's, let's say. That'd be nice. So for those of you who don't know the Dominion, it is a grassroots media cooperative. It started 5 years ago. Most of the work's been done out of Montreal, and we're trying to expand it to all parts of Canada and actually to the United States as well. A bunch of independent journalists who've worked on different stories. Stuff on Haiti was really important during the period of the coup d'etat. Afghanistan and issues relating to the original peoples in Canada. I wanted to just remind everybody here and myself actually how consolidated the media is in this city. It's actually really one of the most extreme cases in the developed world, which as soon as you leave Canada, you rapidly find out that most of the countries that are so sort of, how do you say, in a sort of very like self-righteous way, Canadians will say, oh, it's an underdeveloped country or it's a third world country. But if you go to different places outside of Canada, outside of the United States, like Mexico, for example, or even Colombia, you'll find that the media culture there is actually far more diversified than what we have here in Vancouver. The example I'm going to use today is Canada's Global. On their website, they claim to reach almost 100% of Canadians. So Canada's Global actually thinks that they are speaking to everybody in this country, and of course they're pushing a particular set of messages. The way that they claim to reach nearly, their word is almost 100% of Canadians, is through Global TV, which is the news network for those of us who don't watch TV, and then E! As well. Here in the Lower Mainland and in Vancouver, we are really in one of the thickest areas of media concentration in Canada. And if you'll bear with me, I'd just like to read the names of all the papers that CanWest owns here in the Lower Mainland. They own the Abbotsford Times, the Burnaby Now, the Chilliwack Times, the Coquitlam Now, the Delta Optimist, the Langley Advance, the Maple Ridge Times, the New Westminster Record, the North Shore News, the Richmond News, the Surrey Now, the Vancouver Courier. They own Dose, which is a daily here in the city, one of the throwaway dailies, along with Metro on 24 Hours. They also own the Vancouver Sun, the Vancouver Province, and the National Post. So pretty much you could reach for three or four or five different newspapers in a day, and they all have the same owner. CanWest acquired most of the newspapers I just named through a deal with Hollinger in the year 2000. That deal was worth $3.5 billion at the time that it was made. And $50 million out of that $3.5 billion are, of course, connected to Conrad Black's current imprisonment. He was put in jail on three counts of fraud relating to embezzling, essentially, money acquired through the transition between Hollinger newspapers and CanWest. So CanWest is not only controlling what we're seeing on TV, but also what we're reading in the newspapers. And here in Vancouver, it's hard to reach for something that's not a CanWest paper. You've got the Globe and Mail, the Georgia Strait, and then a couple of the local weeklies around the city. And Conrad Black also, of course, can also be called the Baron Black of Cross Harbor, which I learned today while I was looking this up. So he is royalty. Don't forget it. The market value of CanWest today is estimated at $366 million. So going back to 2000, they acquired all these newspapers from Hollinger for $3.5 billion, and they're worth one-tenth of that now. They're also carrying a debt of $3.8 billion. So what I'm trying to get at is essentially this media consolidation is not only essentially succeeding in controlling almost every source of information accessible to people in Vancouver, but it can be argued that it is capitalist business success model, all that kind of stuff. It's a sinking ship. They're not actually recouping their costs. And I think analyzing it in that way, you'd think that they were making money, the advertising heavy model. That's how the revenues are coming in, is through advertising. But we can actually argue that it doesn't make sense on a business level. So there must be other reasons for a certain group of elite to be controlling and pushing all these newspapers, and that is basically controlling what we're thinking about, what our discourse can be, how we can interact with each other. And I think that's what CanWest's goal is, not only here in Vancouver, but they own 11 dailies, major dailies across the country. What we've seen through this huge media consolidation, exemplified by CanWest, is cuts in journalistic staff, cuts in editorial staff, and that was actually kind of publicized when it happened here in Vancouver. David Beers, who now edits Satayi, was one of the people who was cut from the Vancouver Sun as an editor. Content has been homogenized across the country, so you have centralized editorials coming out of Winnipeg that are run all the way across the country, which is essentially telling all Canadians. I mean, they have the National Post, which is the biggest money loser of all, but they're also running a standardized editorial set in all these different major newspapers across the country. You have less local coverage. I grew up in Maple Ridge, and I remember before when the Maple Ridge Times was still somewhat, or the Maple Ridge News was still somewhat independent, and you actually had local journalists that would cover things that were happening in the community, and now it's like a lot of fees from writers and AP about basically why we should support, a $700 billion bailout of Wall Street and all that kind of stuff. So it's taking away from our local, it's isolating us from our communities and from being able to talk with each other and connecting it to the money-making machine. But the papers themselves are what they call loss leaders, they're actually not making any money. So we know that the business model doesn't stand up, and I use that to intro what we're proposing at the Dominion, which is a cooperative model. We are actually a media cooperative, and I think Peter might talk about that when he addresses Co-op Radio. But what we're hoping with the Dominion Media Cooperative is that it's going to bring us from point A, where we are right now, where essentially we have a very biased, ideologically consolidated, very limited mainstream media, and a very small, marginalized independent media, to point B, which is where we have a very strong, vibrant, independent media that's connected across the country and essentially boosting and helping social movements and people organize in this country. That's what the Dominion wants to do, and we're thinking of the way to get from point A to point B isn't just to say, we're just going to grow, and the more people we have, automatically, the better the newspaper is going to be. The idea is to use a cooperative model and try to plan the growth so that we can expand in a way where people can contribute in all different ways. The cooperative model essentially is where we will have reader members for the paper. So folks who are willing to make a monthly contribution to the newspaper of a certain amount, dollar amount, where in exchange for that, they receive a guaranteed source of good independent news on a monthly basis. We have a website, which is dominionpaper.ca, which is updated every couple days, but we also have a print publication, which goes out 10 times a year. Right now, it's just going to subscribers. Our goal is to have it going out twice a month, within 5 years, and be printing about 15,000 copies every 2 weeks, so to turn it into a bigger force as well on the print side of things. We'll have contributor members, and we already do. I mean, the cooperative model is just in its initial phases. Contributor members, some would say journalist members, but also folks who want to do comics or cartoons, illustrators and other photographers and people who are contributing, that when we have enough reader members who are paying into the model, we'll be able to actually pay out journalists and people will be able to be paid for writing for an independent media source, which is something that we can see hasn't worked, unfortunately, with such excellent publications as Rabble, who to date really haven't paid their journalists other than columnists, and also stuff like indie media, where it's just been basically people working for free. So the cooperative model takes the Dominion to a place where we're able to pay contributors for the hard work that is independent, marginalized journalism, essentially. And then we'll have editor members. And so the reader members and the journalist members and the editor members together will all vote for a board of directors. The idea is that everybody will have a stake, and does have a stake, in the nascent cooperative model that we have going on at the Dominion, which means that we'll do a vote, there'll be an AGM every year, reader members can vote for who the board is going to be, essentially having some editorial control over the paper. It's a national paper, so the idea is English Canada is our target audience. And then the other part of it is that we want to start locals. So the first local that the Dominion is going to launch is in Halifax, and the idea is more like an indie media model where it's people working locally, contributing to the local website, trying to function on the same model, which is a cooperative model with local readers and local writers. Here in Vancouver, we're hoping to launch a Vancouver local of the Dominion in the spring of next year. What that'll mean is that hopefully we'll be able to put together a collective of people who are interested in writing for the Dominion, and I know like a couple people in this room definitely have written for the Dominion, but to make that a little bit more focused and try to get more writing on local issues happening, posting to a local website of Vancouver, call it Vancouver Local of the Dominion, and then have the best stories coming out of the locals put to the national level and then put out in the national level newspaper, so try to bring more local content into what we're putting out nationally. So anybody who's interested in participating in that, please see me after. And like, I just started, this is the first time I presented about the cooperative model, so I'm kind of like, yeah, I've never done this before, I'm a little bit nervous about it. I can talk about mining for about 3 hours and I'd be fine. But talking about cooperative media is sort of scary. I guess the last thing that I will touch on is that we are right now working, the way we're operating right now is essentially we're mailing our hard copies to subscribers once a month, and then once a year we're doing what we're calling a special issue. We've done two so far, one on Canadian foreign policy and another on the tar sands. So the special issues, we're doing a big print run, we're doing events across the country, and try and distribute the paper as much as we can. Because like Gord said, like printing actually does cost a lot of money, right? So we're going to do, our next special issue is going to come out in November, and it is going to be on mining. And I'm basically editing that piece. Mining is a way to look at Canadian foreign policy as well as the history of colonization and the current like struggles happening inside of this country. I think it's a good lens for folks living in this country to understand how Canada actually operates, like cutting through the the whole veneer that were sold by the mainstream media. So we're doing this issue online. We've got stories, like, original stories from places from, like, Thailand to El Salvador to, like, Northwest Territories. So we're going to do 20,000 copies of that one, and here in Vancouver we'll do a launch event for sure in November, so look out for that. And then we're going to do another special issue in 2009. We're going to do that one on the Olympics. That one should come out hopefully in October or September of 2009. The idea is to get some really good content to pull a lot of analysis and get independent journalists writing about the Olympics and basically kick up the level of debate a whole notch, because what we're seeing in the mainstream media isn't letting us be critical of the Olympics. If, like, CanWest decides the Olympics is great, that's it, and there's really no space for discussion on it. So we want to, you know, together with different movements that are organizing around the Olympics, try to push that with the special issue. So again, we're always looking for contributors, for folks to become members, participate to the level that folks are comfortable. Yeah, talk to me after if you're interested, and thank you very much.
Left to right, so right to left, politically. But yeah, I wanted to take. Thanks. I wanted to take.
What?
I'm in the middle, so I'm not. But I wanted to take. Before I made a few remarks, just wanted to take strong issue with one thing Don said about the McDonald's. No. I mean. When in a few years everyone in Canada is reading the Dominion every day, we won't have McDonald's. We'll have Don Jose Bove on
the
album.
And the idea isn't to have a media monopoly with just the Dominion, right? We love Rahul and we don't want to go away. For those slightly to the right, no, I'm just kidding.
My former colleague, my current colleague and founder of Seven Oaks with me, an earlier publication we did, is a comedian, and he is not speaking tonight. So Don and I are going to cut it out, and I'm going to get going with my talk. But I found it really interesting today. Actually, Don called me last night just to see what, just sort of trade notes on what we might discuss on tonight's forum, so we weren't being redundant. And she reported on being at an all candidates debate at the School of Journalism at UBC, and it was Michael Byers and the Vancouver Center. Candidates in the federal election. Hedy Fry, Lauren Mancourt, I don't know if everyone's heard that he's running, and Adrian Carr. I said we're going to cut it out. Anyway, but Don said to me, Michael Byers is going to be in the media tomorrow because he said shut down the tar sands. And I thought, well, that's great. What the heck is Michael Byers doing saying shut down the tar sands? But finally someone is really putting out there in a strong way a real position that is needed on the most important issue, I think, in Canadian politics today, and arguably one of the most important issues in the world, is the just totally scandalous and out-of-control tar sands development. Well, sure as Don called it this morning, on the front page of the Vancouver Sun, there was an article about shutting down the tar sands. But the whole thrust of the article, it was clear the Vancouver Sun thought this was a big gaffe by the NDP, and they sort of framed it that way. And so the issue wasn't anything to do with the environmental destruction of the tar sands. It was all about how this had been a gaffe by a rookie candidate, and he had sort of had to backpedal and reiterate the NDP's actual position, which is a moratorium on new development, so not approving any new development. So it was all about just to slip up in the campaign, and I think this is very, very standard. Another good example, and I don't want to just talk about sort of what the NDP is not doing, because that's a topic we could have a whole forum about, but you remember 4 years ago, the first time Jack Layton was running as the leader of the NDP, he made a really generic statement at a rally in Toronto during the election campaign, where he said, Paul Martin is personally responsible, or Paul Martin bears responsibility for the death of homeless people on the streets of Toronto. And, the remark didn't, the crowd thought it was a completely reasonable thing to say, because Paul Martin had been the finance minister during the 90s, when all of the federal transfer payments were cut, when the federal government got out of the business of social housing, when the budgets were just slashed. But the next day, and for the remainder of that campaign, really, there was just a vitriolic campaign against this one remark for having dared to personalize the issue of the death of homeless people, personalizing it in the sense of hurting Paul Martin's feelings, or putting some of the onus directly on Paul Martin, who had been the most powerful man in the country, or second most powerful, under Kretschmann. And I think, I can't remember exactly how Leighton was forced to backpedal on that one, or how quickly he did it, but of course they did. So, all of this to say that I think the political crisis we're facing, where issues and ideas that would really challenge the system we live under, capitalism, those are never discussed during elections or outside of elections. And you know, the crisis of our political debate is also is reflected in the crisis of the media, and the two are, I think, inseparable. So when the political parties themselves aren't holding back the debate from addressing root causes or from talking too harshly about the political leaders who implement poverties that result in people's deaths, when the political parties aren't holding back themselves, the media slaps them into line in a very, very severe way. Swift voting them, if you will, for any little slip up too far to the left. So I know it's Kim Campbell, our brief prime minister here from Vancouver, who said that election campaigns are not the time to discuss issues. But I think really what we have in Canada and in our media is that it's never the time to discuss issues. And more importantly, it's never the time to discuss serious political ideas that would you know, not just put band-aids on the issues, but really address the system as a whole. So I'm the editor of Rabble.ca. It's a website that started 7 years ago, at the same time as the anti-FTAA protests in Quebec City. It was a number of feminists and activists from across the country. Judy Brebeck was sort of the spokesperson originally, and one of the main founders of the website. So Rabble.ca was started with the explicit intent to sort of not draw this false separation between social movement activism and independent media, or media, you know, progressive journalists, however you want to phrase it. Where if, you know, if the corporate media directly serves the corporate politicians and the overall political system, then independent media and activist media should be very just openly supportive of social movements, and should make that a central aim of it, you know, of its mission, is to build the movement and rebuild the left. Because it is important to note that the concentration of the media that happened over the last 25 years in Canada wasn't unavoidable. It did happen through overturning of regulatory legislation, watering down of all kinds of regulations that had been there, the total absence of application of antitrust laws that even in places like the United States, sometimes they've prevented such high levels of media concentration by using their antitrust laws to keep capitalism pure. But so I think for a long time, I mean, the left in Canada has been weak all of those last 25 years, but it's been weakened as as the left and progressive people sort of failed to make media reform and opposing media concentration a central part of their campaigns and their political programs. So, you know, for whatever reason, the left was overwhelmed that all of these things could have been prevented, and that also means that all of these things, you know, can be overturned. You know, privatized firms, as we found out, can be renationalized in recent days. It's the same thing with media. It's the same thing with the public airwaves and the private corporations that dominate them. Those things can be taken back. So we also, I think, have to pay more attention to the actual nuts and bolts of the legislation that happens, you know, the Senate hearings on media reform. Steve Anderson, I don't think, is here tonight, but he is a Vancouver-based activist who runs a campaign for democratic media. And I encourage everyone to check out their website. Just,
I actually have a sign-up sheet for them with me.
Nava has a sign-up sheet? Okay, perfect. Send it around. That's a Canada-wide campaign that that does a lot of the work on those things and make sure that people present at the hearings when they happen, and also deals with internet issues of net neutrality and, you know, to keep the internet out of corporate domination and things like video streaming online that right now are very free and available. The bandwidth carriers companies are trying to restrict that because they see that this is where the big market opportunities are happening in the future. So there is an effort to attack net neutrality and sort of the relative freedom of expression on the internet right now. So Campaign for Democratic Media is a thing to check out for that. So the only thing I wanted to plug with Rebel.ca is an election blog that we've been running to give some sort of alternative coverage during this election. We have a number of social activists and a few pundits, but also pundit usually mean derisively, but these are like genuinely left pundits, as well as some grassroots activists, and you can get a lot of perspectives there. 8 or 10 posts and news stories every day, analyzing the lack of meaningful debates during the election and what's being missed. And it's pretty wide open. We have everybody from people who are arguing with limited strategic voting, which I'm not a fan of, but anybody but Harper perspectives, all the way to eat your ballot or don't bother voting and just stay out in the streets. So that's just at election.rabble.ca. But it'd be great when we get into the discussion. I'm going to wrap up here, but just to sort of hear from people what they think is missing or what the alternative media is not doing. And also, we should just, I think, have a discussion about how we can get the word out about what is out there. I think that stickers are the most fun form of political organizing in general, and it'd be great to get some additional like independent media advertising stickers that we can give out. And we should be bolder than that too, posters and larger adhesive things that we can post all around the city. I think that's critical. But I'm sure that there's a number of activists here who maybe just aren't aware, don't have the technical skills to do some of the things that can be done now with media online. One of the things is podcasting, but also just video production, and Homeless Nation is here recording this, but activists now can do videos, mini documentaries, and podcasts on any issue for almost no cost, compared to what it used to be. So I think it's also, in addition to sort of talking about what we'd like to see more in the independent media and getting the word out, it's also really important that we share skills and just let all of the good activists that we know doing the work and doing the heavy lifting on the issues in this city and across Canada, just sort of provide them the skills or let them know how easy it is, I guess, to use some of these media tools now. Especially a fan of podcasting. Rabble has a podcast network that sort of provides like a little wire service of all the different radio programs done across the country. Red Eye is one of the best. Every day there's two or three new podcasts from Red Eye that pop up on rabble.ca. And so anyone all across Canada, or we have a few international, that is doing a campus radio show, a community radio show, or just taking their digital recorder and once a week giving people a little update on a topic that they're very knowledgeable about, that can be turned into a podcast that anyone can download and have pop up on their computer as often and in as many places as they want. So all of this stuff is out there. So if you're working on an issue and very passionate about it, I think you should consider using the podcasting and also just look into more of the use of creative video, just audio, video, visual methods of getting our message out there. In general. Yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to say. I look forward to the discussion. Thank you.